And then there's super glue, obviously. It's like an office supply Justice League. I seriously came this close to buying them just so I could text you pictures of their crime-fighting selves. I would have made capes for them and everything. Except someone still doesn't want to exchange numbers. Love, Shock. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, January 2nd at 10:31 a.m. Subject, reborn. I think you've rendered me speechless. I just read the Wikipedia article, and I'm looking through pictures now. I kind of can't stop looking at them. You might have found the creepiest thing on the internet, Jacques. And I seriously laughed out loud at your crime-fighting office supply Justice League. I wish I could have seen them. But about the texting thing, all I can say is that I'm really sorry. The idea of exchanging phone numbers just terrifies me. It does. It's just the idea that you could call me and hear my voicemail message and know. I don't know what to say, Jacques. I'm just not ready for you to know who I am. I know it's stupid, and honestly, at this point, I spend about half my waking hours imagining us meeting in person for the first time. But I can't think of a way for that to happen without everything changing. I think I'm scared to lose you. Does that make sense? Don't hate me. Love, Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, January 2nd at 12:25 p.m. Subject, regarding reborn. I guess I'm trying to understand where you're coming from with the texting thing. You have to trust me. Yes, I'm nosy, but I'm not going to call you if you're not comfortable with it. I don't mean for this to be a big deal, and I don't want to stop emailing. I just also want to be able to text you like a normal person. And yes, I want to meet in person. And obviously that would change things, but I think I'm kind of ready for them to change. So maybe this is a big deal. I don't know. I want to know your friends' names and what you do after school and all the things you haven't been telling me. I want to know what your voice sounds like. Not until you're ready, though. And I could never hate you. You're not going to lose me. Just think about it. Okay? Love, Shock. 23. It's the first day back at school, and I honestly consider spending the entire day in the parking lot. I can't explain it. I thought I would be fine, but now that I'm here, I can't seem to get out of the car. I feel a little sick just thinking about it. Nora says, "I really don't think anyone is going to remember." I shrug. It was on there for, what, 3 days? And that was over a week ago. 4 days, I say. I don't even think people really read the Tumblr. We walk into the atrium together, just as the first bell is ringing. People are stampeding and pushing down the stairs. No one seems to pay any particular attention to me, and for all of Nora's reassurances, I can see that she's as relieved as I am. I move with the crowd, working my way toward my locker, and I think I'm finally starting to relax. A couple of people wave at me like normal. Garrett from my lunch table nods and says, "What's up, Spear?" I toss my backpack into my locker and pull out my books for English and French. No one has slid any homophobic notes into the slats of my locker, which is good. No one's etched the word fag into my locker yet either, which is even better. I'm almost ready to believe that things have gotten a little better at Creekwood, or that no one saw Martin's Tumblr post after all. Martin. God, I don't even want to think about having to see his stupid, evil face. And of course he's in my first fucking period. I guess there's still this quiet pulse of dread when I think about seeing Martin again. I'm trying to just breathe. As I'm walking into the language arts wing, this football guy I hardly recognize almost runs directly into me coming down the stairs. I step back to steady myself, but he puts his hand on my shoulder and looks me right in the eye. "Why, hello there," he says. "Hi." Then he grabs me by the cheeks and pulls my face in like he's going to kiss me. Mwah! He grins, and his face is so close I can feel the heat of his breath. and all around me people laugh like fucking Elmo. I yank my body away from him, cheeks burning. "Where are you going, Spear?" someone says. "McGregor wants a turn." And everyone starts laughing again. I mean, I don't even know these people. I don't know why in God's name this is funny to them. In English class, Martin won't look at me. But all through the day, Leah and Abby are like freaking pit bulls, throwing down the stink eye in all directions whenever anyone even looks at me funny. I mean, it's really pretty sweet. And it isn't a total disaster. Some people sort of whisper and laugh, and a couple of people randomly give me these huge smiles in the hallway, whatever that means. These two lesbian girls I don't even know come up to me at my locker and hug me and give me their phone numbers. And at least a dozen straight kids make a point of telling me that they support me. One girl even confirms that Jesus still loves me. It's a ton of attention. It kind of makes my head spin. At lunch, the girls take it upon themselves to discuss and evaluate the 50 million guys they apparently think are boyfriend prospects for me. And it's all perfectly fucking hilarious until Anna makes some joke about Nick being gay, which causes Nick to drape himself all over Abby. So then Leah's irreparably pissed off. "We should find Leah a boyfriend too," says Abby, which honestly makes me cringe. I love Abby, and I know she's just trying to lighten the mood, but Jesus Christ. There are times when she manages to say the exact opposite of the right thing. "No fucking thank you, Abby," Leah says, in this sickeningly pleasant tone. Except her eyes are like crackling fireballs of rage. She stands up abruptly, pushing her chair in without a word. As soon as she leaves, Garrett looks at Bram, and Bram bites his lip, which I'm pretty sure is straight dude code for Bram likes Leah. And I don't know why, but it pisses me the fuck off. "If you like her, just ask her out," I say to Bram, and he immediately starts blushing. I don't even know. I'm just so sick of straight people who can't get their shit together. Somehow I manage to survive until rehearsal. It's the first day without scripts, and we jump right into running some of the big group scenes. There's an accompanist at rehearsal now, and people are really focused and energized. I guess it's just dawned on everyone that opening night is in less than a month. But partway through the pickpocket song, Martin suddenly stops singing. And then Abby says, "You're fucking kidding me." And everyone is quiet for a minute, looking at each other. Looking everywhere but at me. For a minute I'm confused, but then I follow Abby's gaze to the back of the auditorium. And there's this pair of random dudes in front of the double helixes who look a little familiar. I think they were in my health class last year. One of them is wearing a hoodie and fake glasses and a skirt over his khakis, and they're both holding giant poster board signs. The first guy's sign says, "How you doing, Simon?" And the guy in the skirt sign says, what, in the butt?" The guys are grinding, and some other people peek through the doorway laughing. This one girl laughs so hard she's clutching her stomach, and someone says, "Stop, y'all. Oh my God, y'all are so bad." But she's laughing too. It's strange. I'm not even blushing. I feel like I'm watching this happen from a million miles away. Then suddenly, Taylor freaking Metternich, of all people, runs down the steps at the side of the stage and down the aisle of the auditorium, and Abby is right behind her. "Aw, shit," says the guy in the skirt, and the other guy giggles. And then they haul ass out of the auditorium, letting the door slam shut. Taylor and Abby burst through behind them, and there's this huge commotion of yelling and footsteps. Ms. Albright runs after them, and the rest of us just kind of stand there. Except somehow I end up sitting on one of the platforms, smushed in between two senior girls who have their arms around my shoulders. I catch a glimpse of Martin, and it looks like he's been crumpled. His hands are covering his face. A few minutes later, Abby bursts back through the door, followed by Ms. Albright, who has her arm around Taylor. And Taylor is splotchy and flushed, like she's been crying. I watch as Ms. Albright guides Taylor to the front row, lets her sit next to Cal, and then kneels down in front of them for a minute to talk to them. Abby walks straight back up the stairs to me, shaking her head. "People suck," she says. I nod slowly. I honestly thought Taylor was going to hit one of those guys. Taylor Metternich. Seriously. Almost hitting some guy.
You're kidding me.
No, really, Abby says. I almost did too.
Good,
says one of the senior girls, Brianna. I look briefly at Taylor. She's leaning back in her chair with her eyes closed, just breathing. But she didn't hit him, right? I don't want her to get in trouble because of me.
Oh my gosh, don't even say that. None of this is your fault, Simon,
Abby says. Those guys are douchebags.
They can't get away with that, says Brianna.
Don't we have a zero-tolerance policy?
But Creekwood's zero-tolerance bullying policy is enforced about as strictly as the freaking dress code.
Don't worry, says Abby. They're sitting in Ms. Knight's office right now. I think their mommies are getting called.
And sure enough, moments later, Ms. Albright gathers everyone in a circle on the stage.
So I'm sorry you guys had to see that.
She's looking at me especially.
It was beyond disrespectful and inappropriate, and I want you to know that I take this extremely seriously.
She pauses for a moment, and I look at her. And I realize that Ms. Albright is absolutely livid.
So, unfortunately, we're going to have to end here for the day so I can deal with this. I know this is unexpected, and I apologize to all of you. We'll pick back up tomorrow.
Then she walks over to me and squats down in front of my platform.
You okay, Simon?
I feel myself blush a little bit.
I'm fine.
Okay, well, she says quietly. Just know that those assholes are getting suspended. I'm not even kidding. I will make it my hill to die on.
Abby, Brianna, and I just stare at her. It's the first time I've ever heard a teacher cuss.
So, Abby's stuck at school until the late bus leaves, and I feel really terrible about that. I don't know. It just feels like all of this is a little bit my fault. But Abby tells me not to be ridiculous, and that she can kill the time by watching the soccer tryouts.
I'll come with you, I say.
Simon, seriously, go home and relax.
But what if I want to heckle Nick?
She can't argue with that. We cut through the science hallway and down the back stairs toward the music room, where there appears to be some pretty badass drum and guitar business going on behind closed doors. They almost sound professional, except the vocals are strange and random, like the lower part of a harmony. Abby dances to the drum beat for a minute as we pass, and then we bust out the side door near the soccer fields. It's really freaking chilly out, and I have no idea how these soccer kids are surviving with their shorts and bare legs. The girls are on the close field, and it's dozens of ponytails in motion. We walk past them to get to the boys, who are running around orange cones and kicking soccer balls back and forth to each other. Abby lets her arms hang over the side of the fence, leaning in to watch. A lot of the guys are wearing these long-sleeved spandex shirts under their soccer shirts, and a few of them are wearing shin guards. And they all have those soccer calves, so it's kind of a nice view. The coach blows his whistle, and all the guys gather around him for a minute while he talks. And then they disperse, passing around bottles of water and dribbling balls and stretching their legs. Nick jogs over to us right away, pink-faced and grinning. And then Garrett and Bram come, too.
It's weird that they're making you try out again, says Abby.
I know, says Garrett, panting. He's sweaty and red, and his eyes look electric blue.
It's like a formality, kind of just to see...
He pauses to catch his breath.
Like, where he wants to put us.
Oh, okay, she says.
So what, you're just blowing off rehearsal? Nick says, smiling at Abby.
Pretty much, she says. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna go ogle soccer boys now. She leans in closer to Nick, grinning up at him.
Oh, really?
Says Nick. It's starting to feel like I shouldn't be listening in on this. So it's going well? I ask, turning to Garrett and Bram.
Pretty well, says Garrett, and Bram nods.
It's funny that I eat lunch with these guys 5 days a week, but we never really hang out apart from the group. I kind of wish I knew them better. Even if Bram doesn't have his shit together about Leah, I don't know. For one thing,
Both Garrett and Bram have been totally cool about the gay thing all day, which I guess I didn't expect from a bunch of athletes. Also, Bram is cute. Like, really, really cute. He stands a foot or so back from the fence, totally sweaty, with a white turtleneck under his soccer shirt. And he's not really talking, but he has very expressive brown eyes, and light brown skin, and soft dark curls, and cute, knobbly hands. "What happens if you really screw up the audition?" I ask. "Can they kick you off the team?"
"Audition?" asks Bram, smiling so quietly. And when he looks at me, I feel this happy sort of ache.
"Tryouts." I blush, and I smile back at him. And then I feel a little guilty, because of Blue. Even though he's still not ready, even though he's just words on a laptop screen. It's just that I also kind of feel like he's my boyfriend. I don't even know. So, maybe it's the winter air, or maybe it's soccer boy calves, but after everything that's happened today, I'm actually in a pretty decent mood. Until I get to the parking lot, because Martin Addison is leaning against my car.
"Where have you been?" he says.
I wait for him to move. I mean, I don't even want to look at him.
"Can we talk for a second?" he asks.
"I don't have anything to say to you," I say.
"Okay, well,"
he sighs, and I can actually see his breath.
"Simon, just, I seriously owe you an apology."
I just kind of stand there. He stretches his arms forward, cracking his knuckles under his gloves.
"God, I'm just so sorry. What happened in there? I didn't know that would, I mean, I didn't think people still did shit like that."
"Right, who'd have guessed? Because Shady Creek is just so progressive." Martin shakes his head.
"I just seriously didn't think it would be such a big thing."
I don't even know what to say to that.
"Look, I'm sorry, all right? I was pissed off. The whole Abby thing, I wasn't thinking. And then my brother basically ripped me a new one, and I was just... I just feel like shit, okay? And I deleted those screenshots ages ago, I swear to God. So can you please just say something?"
I mean, I almost start laughing.
"What the fuck do you want me to say?"
"I don't know," he says.
"I'm just trying..."
"Okay, how about this? I think you're an asshole. I think you're a huge fucking asshole. I mean, don't even fucking pretend you didn't know this would happen. You blackmailed me. This was... I mean, wasn't that the whole goddamn point? Humiliating me?"
He shakes his head and opens his mouth to reply, but I cut him off. "And you know what? You don't get to say it's not a big thing. This is a big fucking thing, okay? This was supposed to be... This is mine. I'm supposed to decide when and where and who knows and how I want to say it."
Suddenly, my throat gets thick.
"So yeah, you took that from me. And then you brought Blue into it? Seriously? You fucking suck, Martin. I mean, I don't even want to look at you."
He's crying. He's trying not to, but he's seriously full-on crying. And my heart sort of twists.
"So can you just step away from my car," I say, "and leave me the fuck alone?"
He nods, puts his head down, and walks away quickly. I get in my car and turn it on. And then I just start sobbing. 24. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, January 5th at 7:19 p.m. Subject, snow. Blue. "Look outside. I can't believe it. Actual flurries on the first day back at school. Any chance this will turn into another snowpocalypse? Because I'd be really, really cool with having the rest of the week off." God, it's been a weird fucking day. I don't even know what to tell you other than the fact that being out to the universe is completely exhausting. Seriously, I'm just totally spent. Do you ever get so angry you start crying? And do you ever feel guilty for getting angry? Tell me I'm not weird. Love, Shock. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, January 5th at 10:01 p.m. Subject, regarding snow. I don't think you're weird. It sounds like you've had a shitty day, and I wish there was a way for me to make it better. Have you tried eating your feelings? I hear Oreos can be therapeutic. Also, I'm not really one to talk here, but you really shouldn't feel guilty for getting angry, especially if I'm right about what's making you angry. Okay, I have to tell you something, and I think it may be something upsetting. I actually don't think my timing could be worse, but I can't think of any way around it, so here goes. Jacques, I'm almost positive I know who you are. Love, Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, January 6th at 7:12 p.m. Subject, really? Wow. Okay. Not upsetting, but this is kind of a big moment, right? Actually, I think I know who you are, too. So just for fun, I'm guessing. One, you share a first name with a former U.S. president. Two, and a comic book character. Three, you like to draw. Four, you have blue eyes. Five, and you once pushed me down a dark hallway in a rolling chair. Love, Jacques. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, January 6th at 9:43 p.m. Subject, regarding really? One, actually yes. Two, kind of an obscure character, but yes. Three, not really. Four, no. Five, definitely not. I'm sorry, but I don't think I'm the person you think I am. Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, January 6th at 11:18 p.m. Subject, regarding, really? Well, I was doing great there until the end. So yeah. Wow. I guess I was dead wrong. I'm sorry, Blue. I hope that doesn't make things weird between us. Anyway, maybe you'll guess wrong about me too? And then we would be even? Though I'm guessing you saw the thing on the Tumblr. God, I feel like such an idiot. Love, Jacques. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, January 7th at 7:23 a.m. Subject, regarding, really? On the Tumblr? You mean Creek Secrets? I honestly don't think I've looked at it since August. What was on there? Anyway, you don't have to feel like an idiot. It's fine. But I really don't think I'm wrong. Jacques Adi, right? Blue. 25. So yeah, I've been careless. I guess I left a trail of clues, and I shouldn't be surprised that Blue put them together. Maybe I kind of wanted him to. Jacques Adi is Simon Says in French, by the way, and it's obviously not as clever as I thought it was. But I really fucked it all up with the cowl thing. I mean, honest to God, I'm a freaking moron. I seriously don't know what I was thinking. Blue-green eyes and a gut feeling that Blue was cowl? It's classic Simon logic. No surprise that I was horribly, epically wrong. I spent about 20 minutes staring at Blue's email on my laptop that morning before writing back. And then I sit there refreshing the browser over and over again until Nora bangs on my door. We get to school 5 minutes early anyway. So I spend 5 more minutes sitting in my parked car staring at my email again on my phone. I mean, he didn't see the Tumblr post, so that's something. That's a huge something, actually. I walk in just as the bell is ringing, and I'm in a serious daze. It's lucky that my hands seem to know my locker combination, because my brain is checked out. People talk to me, and I nod along, but absolutely nothing penetrates. I think a couple of pickup truck guys changed my name to Seaman Queer. I don't know. I don't even think I care. All I can think about is Blue. I guess a part of me is hoping for something today. Some kind of reveal. I can't believe Blue wouldn't tell me now that he knows who I am. Which means I'm looking for it everywhere. Leah passes me a note in French class, and my heart starts pounding, thinking it could be a message from him. Meet me by your locker. I'm ready. Something like that. But it turns out to be an impressively realistic, manga-style drawing of our French teacher performing fellatio on a baguette. Speaking of things that remind me of Blue. And when someone taps me on the shoulder in history class, my heart is a pinball. But it's just Abby. Shh, listen to this. I listen. And it's Taylor explaining to Martin that she wasn't necessarily trying to get a gap between her thighs, but it's just her metabolism, and she didn't even realize that some girls try to get the gap on purpose. Martin nods and scratches his head and looks bored. She can't help her metabolism, Simon, Abby says. Apparently not. Taylor may be an undercover, belly-fighting ninja, but she's still kind of awful. And then Abby nudges me again later to pick up a pen she dropped, and it's pinballs all over again. I can't even help it. There's just this threat of anticipation that I can't seem to quell. So when the school day ends and nothing extraordinary has happened, it's a tiny heartbreak. It's like 11 o'clock on the night of your birthday, when you realize no one's throwing you a surprise party after all. On Thursday, after rehearsal, Cal very casually mentions that he's bisexual, and that maybe we should hang out sometime. It catches me off guard. All I can do is sort of gape at him. Sweet, slow-moving Cal, with his hipster bangs and his ocean eyes. But the thing is, he's not Blue. Blue, who's barely returning my emails. Amazingly, I forget all about Cal until the next day in English class. Mr. Wise is out of the room when I walk in, and the nerds are restless. A couple of people are arguing about Shakespeare, and then someone stands on a chair and basically bellows Hamlet's soliloquy into this other dude's ear. The couch is especially crowded for some reason. Nick is perched on Abby's lap. She leans her head out from behind Nick's torso and calls me over. She's beaming. Simon, I was just telling Nick about what happened in rehearsal yesterday. Yes, says Nick. Who, pray tell, is this Calvin fellow? I shake my head, blushing. No one. He's from drama club. He's no one? Nick tilts his head. Are you sure? Because this one tells me... Shut up, says Abby, clamping a hand over his mouth. I'm sorry, Simon. I'm just so excited for you. It wasn't a secret, right? No, but it's not... It wasn't anything. Well, we'll see, Abby says, with a smug little smile. I don't know how to explain to her that, for all intents and purposes, I'm already taken. By someone who evidently shares a first name with a president, and an obscure cartoon character, and doesn't like to draw, and doesn't have blue eyes, and has not yet pushed me in a rolling chair. Someone who seemed to like me better before he knew who I was. 26. From hourtohour.note2note@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, January 9th at 8:23 p.m. Subject, regarding really? I mean, I get it. Just because I was careless doesn't mean it's fair to push you into revealing yourself before you're ready. And believe me, I'm the freaking expert on that. But now you know my superhero identity, and I don't know yours. And that's weird, right? I don't know what else to say. Anonymity served a purpose for us, and I get that. But now I want to know you for real. Love, Simon. from bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, January 10th at 2:12 p.m. Subject, regarding really? Well, Blue is kind of my superhero identity, so you're really talking about my civilian identity. But that's obviously miles away from the point. It's just that I don't know what else to say. I'm truly sorry, Simon. Anyway, it looks like things are working out the way you wanted them to. So good for you. Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, January 10th at 3:45 p.m. Subject, regarding really. Working out the way I wanted them to? What the heck are you talking about? Simon. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, January 12th at 12:18 a.m. Subject, regarding really. Seriously, I don't know what in God's holy name you're talking about, because pretty much nothing seems to be working out the way I want it to. Okay, I get that you don't want to text, and you don't want to meet in person. Fine. But I hate that everything's different now, even in our emails. I mean, yes, it's an awkward situation. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I really do understand if you don't find me attractive or whatever. I'll get over it. But you're kind of my best friend in a lot of ways, and I really want to keep you. Can we just pretend none of this ever happened and go back to normal? Simon. 27. Which isn't to say I'm going to stop thinking about it. I spend all of Sunday in my room, switching between The Smiths and Kid Cudi at top volume, and I don't even care if that's too random for my parents. Their minds can stay blown for all I care. I try to get Bieber to sit with me on my bed, but he keeps pacing, so I put him out in the hallway. But then he whines to come back in. "Nora, get Bieber!" I yell over the music, but she doesn't answer. So I text it to her. She texts back. "Do it yourself. I'm not home." Where are you? I really hate this new thing where Nora's never home. But she doesn't text back, and I'm feeling too heavy and listless to get up and ask my mom. I stare up at the ceiling fan. So Blue isn't going to tell me, which means I have to figure it out myself. I've been running through the same list of clues in my head for a few hours now. Same first name as a president and an obscure comic book character. Half-Jewish. Excellent grammar. Easily nauseated. Virgin. Doesn't really go to parties. Likes superheroes. Likes Reese's and Oreos, i.e. not an idiot. Divorced parents. Big brother to a fetus. Dad lives in Savannah. Dad's an English teacher. Mom's an epidemiologist. The problem is, I'm beginning to realize I hardly know anything about anyone. I mean, I generally know who's a virgin, but I don't have a clue whether most people's parents are divorced or what their parents do for a living. I mean, Nick's parents are doctors, but I don't know what Leah's mom does. And I don't even know what the deal is with her dad, because Leah never talks about him. I have no idea why Abby's dad and brother still live in D.C., and these are my best friends. I've always thought of myself as nosy, but I guess I'm just nosy about stupid stuff. It's actually really terrible now that I think about it. But it's pointless, because even if I crack the code somehow, it doesn't change the fact that Blue isn't interested. He found out who I am, and now it's broken, and I don't know what to do. I told him I understand if he's not attracted to me. I tried to make it sound like I don't mind, but I don't understand. And I totally mind. This fucking sucks, actually. On Monday, there's a plastic grocery bag looped through the handle of my locker, and my first thought is that it's a jockstrap. I guess I'm picturing some stupid athlete giving me a sweaty jockstrap as a grand gesture of humiliation and douchery. I don't know.
Maybe I'm paranoid. Anyway, it's not a jockstrap. It's a jersey cotton t-shirt with a logo from Elliott Smith's Figure Eight. Resting on top is a note that says this: "I'm assuming Elliott understands that you would have made it to his shows if you could have." The note is written on blue-green construction paper in perfectly straight print. Not a hint of slant. Then of course he remembered the second T in Elliott, because he's blue. He would. The shirt is a medium, and it's vintage soft, and everything about it is entirely, amazingly perfect. For one wild moment, I think I'll find a bathroom and change into it right now. But I stop myself, because it's still weird, because I still don't know who he is. And the idea of him seeing me in the shirt makes me really self-conscious for some reason. So I keep it neatly folded in the bag, and then I put the bag in my locker. And then I float through the day in a jittery, happy daze. But then I get to rehearsal, and there's this sudden seismic shift. I don't even know. It has something to do with Cal. He's leaving the auditorium to go to the bathroom just as I arrive, and he stops for a minute in the doorway. And then we sort of smile at each other and both keep walking. It's nothing. It's not even a moment. But there's this sunburst of anger that starts in my chest. I mean, I can actually physically feel it. And it's all because Blue is a goddamn coward. He'll hang a fucking t-shirt from the door of my locker, but he doesn't have the guts to approach me in person. He's ruined everything. Now there's this adorable guy with awesome bangs who maybe even likes me, and it's completely pointless. I'm not ever going to hang out with Cal. I'll probably never have a boyfriend. I'm too busy trying not to be in love with someone who isn't real. The rest of the week is this exhausting blur. Rehearsals are an extra hour every night now, which means I'm having vertical dinners over the kitchen counter and trying not to drop crumbs in my textbooks. My dad says he misses me this week, which really just means he's sad about having to TiVo The Bachelor. I haven't heard from Blue at all, and I haven't emailed him either. Friday's a big day, I guess. It's a week before opening night, and we're performing Oliver twice in full costume during the school day. Freshmen and seniors in the morning, and juniors and sophomores in the afternoon. We have to be at school an hour early to get ready, which means Nora gets stuck hanging out in the auditorium. But Cal puts it to work, and she seems content taping up cast photos on the wall of the atrium, next to some screenshots from the Mark Lester movie version and a super enlarged list of the cast and crew. Backstage is the best kind of chaos. Props are missing, and people wander around partially in costume, and the various Creekwood music prodigies are in the orchestra pit running through the overture. It's actually our first time doing the play with the orchestra, and just hearing them practice makes it seem that much more real. Taylor is already dressed and in makeup, and she stands in the wings doing some awkward vocal warm-up that she invented herself. Martin can't find his beard. I wear my first of three costumes, which is this scraggly, oversized oatmeal-colored shirt and baggy drawstring pants and no shoes. A couple of the girls put some junk in my hair to make it messy, which is basically like putting high heels on a giraffe. And then they tell me I have to wear eyeliner, which I absolutely detest. It's bad enough that they want me to wear my contacts. The only person I trust to do it is Abby, who puts me in a chair by the window in the girls' dressing room. None of the girls care that I'm in there, and it's not even about me being gay. The dressing rooms are just generally a total free-for-all, and anyone who cares about privacy at all changes in the bathroom. "Close them," she says. I shut my eyes, and Abby's fingertips tug softly next to my eyelid. Then there's this scritch-scritch feeling like I'm being drawn on, because I'm not even kidding. Eyeliner actually comes in a freaking pencil. "Do I look ridiculous?" "Not at all," she says. She's quiet for a minute. "I have a question for you." "Yep." "Why is your dad in D.C.?" "Well, he's still looking for a job here." "Oh," I say. And then, "Are he and your brother moving down here?" She swipes her fingertip over the edge of my eyelid. "My dad is eventually," she says. "My brother's a freshman at Howard.
and then she nods and tugs the other eyelid taut and starts on that one.
I feel stupid for not knowing that, I say.
Why would you feel stupid?
I guess I never mentioned it.
But I never asked. The worst part is when she does the bottom, because I have to hold my eyes open and the pencil goes right onto the edge, and I freaking hate it when things touch my eyes.
Don't blink, says Abby.
I'm trying not to. Her tongue sticks out a little bit between her lips, and she smells sort of like vanilla extract and talcum powder.
All right, look at me.
Am I done? I ask. She pauses, appraising me.
Basically, she says.
But then she attacks me like a ninja with powders and brushes.
Whoa,
says Brianna, passing through.
I know, says Abby.
Simon, don't take this the wrong way, but you look kind of ridiculously hot. Which leads to me almost getting whiplash from turning my head toward the mirror so fast.
What do you think?
She says, grinning behind me.
I look weird, I say.
It's a little bit surreal. I'm barely used to my face without glasses anyway, and with the eyeliner, the overall impression is eyes.
Wait till Cal sees, Abby says under her breath.
I shake my head.
He's not...
But I can't finish the thought. I can't stop looking at myself. The first performance of the day goes surprisingly smoothly, though most of the seniors use it as an opportunity to sleep in an extra 2 hours. But the freshmen are pretty geeked to be missing first and second period, which makes them the most wildly awesome audience ever. The exhaustion from the week falls away, and I'm carried forward by adrenaline, laughter, and applause. We change out of our costumes, and everyone is really happy and amped up as Ms. Albright gives us notes. And then we're released for regular lunch with the non-theater civilians. I'm a little bit excited to be going to lunch with my stage makeup still intact. And not just because of my supposed ridiculous hotness. It's just kind of awesome to be marked as part of the ensemble. Leah is obsessed with the eye makeup.
Holy fuck, Simon. Don't you love it?
Says Abby. I feel this tug of self-consciousness. It doesn't help that cute Bram is looking at me.
I had no idea your eyes were so gray, Leah says.
She turns to Nick incredulously.
Did you know?
I did not, Nick affirms.
Like, they're kind of charcoal around the edges, she says, and lighter in the middle, and then almost silver around the pupil.
But dark silver.
50 Shades of Grey, says Abby.
Gross, Leah says, and she and Abby exchange smiles. It's actually kind of a miracle. We meet back in the auditorium after lunch, so Ms. Albright can remind us how awesome we are, and then we head backstage to put our costumes back on for the first scene. It's a little rushed this time, but I think I kind of like that. The orchestra warms up again, and chatter rises in the auditorium as the sophomores and juniors file into the seats. This is the one I'm excited about, because it's my own class. Because Blue will be out there somewhere. And as pissed as I am at him, I still like the idea of him being in the audience. I stand with Abby, peeking out at the audience through a crack in the curtains.
Nick's here, she says, pointing toward the left side of the auditorium. And Leah, and Morgan, and Anna are right behind them.
Shouldn't we be starting soon?
I don't know, says Abby.
I turn to peek over my shoulder, where Cal is stationed at a desk in the wings. He wears headphones and a little microphone that curves down in front of his mouth, and at the moment he's frowning and nodding. And then he stands up and walks out toward the auditorium. I look back out into the audience. The house lights are still on, and people are hoisted up onto the backs of their chairs, yelling across the room to each other. A couple of people have crumpled their programs into balls and are lobbing them toward the ceiling.
Our audience awaits, says Abby, grinning into the semi-darkness.
And then there's a hand on my shoulder. It's Ms. Albright.
Simon, would you come with me for a minute?
Sure, I say. Abby and I exchange shrugs. I follow Ms. Albright to the dressing room, where Martin is flopped all over a plastic chair, winding the end of his beard around his finger.
Go ahead and grab a seat.
She shuts the door behind us. Martin shoots me a look like he's asking me what the hell this is all about. I ignore him.
So something just happened, Ms. Albright says slowly. And I wanted to talk to you guys about it first. I think you have a right to know.
Right away, I get this sinking feeling. Ms. Albright stares past us for a second, and then she sort of blinks herself back into the moment. She looks completely exhausted.
Someone altered the cast list out in the atrium, she says, and they changed the names of both of your characters to something inappropriate.
To what? Asks Martin. But I know immediately. Martin plays Fagin. I'm listed as Fagin's boy. I guess some genius thought it would be hilarious to cross out a couple of I's and N's.
Oh, he says, putting it together a moment later.
We exchange glances, and he rolls his eyes. And for a moment, it's almost like we're friends again.
Yep. And there was a drawing. Anyway, Ms. Albright says. Cal is taking it down now. And in a minute, I'll step out there to have a quick chat with your lovely classmates.
Are you canceling the show? Asks Martin, hands on his cheeks.
Would you like me to?
Martin looks at me. No, it's fine. Just don't cancel it. My heart is pounding. I don't know. I don't want to think about any of this. But the one thing I'm sure about is this. The thought of Blue not seeing the play is kind of devastating. I wish it didn't matter.
Martin buries his face in his hands.
I'm so, so sorry, Spear.
Just stop it. I stand up.
Okay. Stop.
I guess I'm getting a little fucking tired of this. I'm trying not to let it touch me. I shouldn't care if stupid people call me a stupid word, and I shouldn't care what people think of me. But I always care.
Abby puts her arm around my shoulders, and we watch through the wings as Ms. Albright steps onto the stage.
Hi, she says into the microphone. She's holding a notebook, and she's not smiling.
Not even a little bit.
Some of you know me. I'm Ms. Albright, the theater teacher.
Someone from the audience whistles suggestively, and a few people giggle.
So I know you're all here to see an exclusive sneak preview of a pretty awesome play. We've got a great cast and crew, and we're eager to get started. But before we get to that, I want to spend a couple of minutes reviewing Creekwood's bullying policy together.
Something about the words review and policy just shuts people down. There's this drone of quiet conversation and denim rustling against seats. Someone shrieks with laughter, and someone else yells, "Quiet!" So then a bunch of people start giggling.
I'll wait, Ms. Albright says. And when the laughter dies down, she holds up the notebook. Does anyone recognize this?
Your diary? Some asshole sophomore.
Ms. Albright ignores him. This is the Creekwood Handbook, which you should have read and signed at the beginning of the year.
Everyone immediately stops listening. God, it's gotta freaking suck to be a teacher.
I sit cross-legged on the floor backstage, surrounded by girls. Ms. Albright keeps talking and reading from the handbook and talking some more. When she says something about zero tolerance, Abby squeezes my hand.
The minutes just drag. I feel so totally blank right now.
Eventually, Ms. Albright steps back into the wings, slamming the handbook down on a chair.
Let's do this, she says. There's a scary, intense look in her eyes.
The house lights start to dim, and the first notes of the overture rise up from the pit. I step out of the wings and onto the stage. My limbs feel really heavy. I kind of want to go home and crawl into bed with my iPod. But the curtains start to open, and I keep moving forward.
28. But later in the dressing room, it hits me. Martin Van Buren, our 8th fucking president. But there's no way. It's not possible.
My washcloth falls to the floor. All around me, girls tuck hats off and let their hair down and scrub foamy soap onto their faces and zip up garment bags. A door bursts open somewhere, and there's a sudden shriek of laughter. My mind is racing. What do I know about Martin? What do I know about Blue? Martin is smart, obviously. Is he smart enough to be Blue? I have no idea if Martin is half Jewish. I mean, he could be. He's not an only child, but I guess he could be lying about that. I don't know. I don't know. It doesn't make sense at all. Because Martin's not gay. But then again, someone thinks he is. Though I probably shouldn't take anything on the authority of some anonymous asshole who called me a fag. Simon, no! Says Abby, appearing in the doorway. What? You washed it off! She stares at my face for a minute. I guess you can still kind of see it. You mean the ridiculous hotness? I say, and she laughs. Listen, I just got a text from Nick, and he's waiting for us in the parking lot. We're taking you out tonight. What? I say. Where? I don't know yet, but my mom's up in D.C. this weekend, meaning the house and car are mine. So you're spending the night in Suzo territory. We're sleeping at your house? Yep, she says. And I notice that she's out of makeup and back in her skinny jeans. So go drop off your sister. Whatever you have to do. I look in the mirror and attempt to push down my hair. Nora already took the bus, I say slowly. It's strange. The Simon in the mirror is still wearing contacts. Still almost unrecognizable. Why are we doing this again? Because we don't have rehearsal for once, she says, poking my cheek. And because you've had a weird-ass day. I almost laugh. She has no fucking idea. All the way out to the parking lot, she talks and schemes, and I let her words kind of wash over me. I'm a little stuck on this Martin situation. It's almost unfathomable. It would mean that Martin wrote that post on the Tumblr back in August, the one about being gay, and that Martin's the one I've been emailing every day for 5 months. I can almost believe it, but I can't explain the blackmail. If Martin's actually gay, why bring Abby into it at all? I think we should spend the afternoon in Little Five Points, Abby says, and then we're definitely going into Midtown. Sounds good, I say. It just doesn't make sense. But then I think about the afternoons at Waffle House and the late evening rehearsals and the way I was actually starting to like him before things fell apart. Blackmail with a side of friendship. Maybe that was the whole point. Except I never got the vibe that he liked me. Not even once. So it can't be that. Martin can't be Blue. Unless... But no. Because it can't be a joke. Blue can't be a joke. That's not even a possibility. No one could be that mean. Not even Martin. I'm having trouble catching my breath. It can't be a joke. Because I don't know what I would do if it were a joke. I can't think about it. God, I'm sorry, but I can't. I won't. Nick's waiting in front of the school, and he and Abby bump fists when they see each other. Got him, she says. So now what? Asks Nick. We drive home and get our stuff, and then you pick us up? That's the plan, says Abby. She swings her backpack around and unzips the smallest pouch, pulling out her car keys. Then she tilts her head to the side. Did you guys talk to Leah? Nick and I look at each other. Not yet, Nick says. He kind of deflates. It's tricky. Because as much as I love Leah, her presence changes everything. She'll be moody and snarly about Nick and Abby. She'll be weird about Midtown. And I don't know how to describe it, really, but her self-consciousness is contagious sometimes. But Leah hates being excluded. Maybe just us three, Nick says, carefully, eyes shifting downward. I can tell he feels kind of shitty about this. Okay, I say. Okay, Abby says. Let's go. 20 minutes later,
I'm in the back seat of Abby's mom's car with a stack of paperbacks under my feet.
"Put them anywhere," Abby says, eyes flicking to meet mine in the rearview mirror.
She reads them when she's waiting to pick me up, or if I'm driving.
"Wow, I get nauseous just from reading my phone in the car," says Nick.
"Nauseated," I say, and my heart twists.
"Well, listen to you, Mr. Linguist."
Nick turns around in his seat to grin at me. Abby eases onto 285 and merges with no difficulty whatsoever. She doesn't even appear tense. It occurs to me that she's easily the best driver out of all of us.
"Do you know where we're going?" I ask.
"I do," says Abby. And 20 minutes later, we pull into the lot for Zesto. I never go to Zesto. I mean, I almost never come into Atlanta proper. It's warm and noisy inside, full of people eating chili dogs and burgers and things like that. But I quite honestly don't give a shit that it's January. I get chocolate ice cream swirled with Oreos, and for the 10 minutes it takes to eat it, I almost feel normal again. By the time we step back out to the car, the sun is beginning to set. So then we go to Junkman's Daughter, which is right next to Aurora Coffee. But I'm not thinking about Blue. We spend a few minutes poking around inside. I sort of love Junkman's Daughter. Nick gets caught up in a display of books about Eastern philosophy, and Abby buys a pair of tights. I end up wandering through the aisles, trying not to make eye contact with scary-looking pink mohawk girls. I'm not thinking about Aurora Coffee, and I'm not thinking about Blue. I can't think about Blue. I really can't think about Blue being Martin. It's dark but not late, and Abby and Nick want to take me to this feminist bookstore that evidently has a lot of gay stuff. So we look through the shelves, and Abby pulls out LGBT picture books to show me. And Nick shuffles around, looking awkward. Abby buys me a book about gay penguins, and then we walk down the street for a little while longer. But it's getting chilly, and we're getting hungry again. So we pile back into the car and drive to Midtown. Abby seems to know exactly where we're going. She pulls into a side street and parallel parks like it's nothing. Then we walk briskly up to the corner and onto the main road. Nick shivers in only a light jacket, and Abby rolls her eyes and says, "Georgia boy." And then she puts her arm around him, rubbing her hand up and down his arm as they walk. "Here we are," she says finally, when we arrive at a place on Juniper called Webster's. There's a big patio strung with Christmas lights and rainbow banners, and even though the patio's empty, the parking lot is overflowing.
"Is this like a gay bar?" I ask.
Abby and Nick both grin.
"Okay,"
I say. "But how are we getting in?" I'm 5'7", Nick can't grow facial hair, and Abby's wearing a wristful of friendship bracelets. There's no freaking way we pass for 21.
"It's a restaurant," says Abby.
"We're getting dinner." Inside, Webster's is packed with guys wearing scarves and jackets and skinny jeans. And they're all cute, and they're all overwhelming. Most of them have piercings. There's a bar in the back, and some kind of hip-hop music playing, and waiters turning sideways to squeeze through the crowd with pints of beer and baskets of chicken wings.
"Just the three of y'all?"
asks the host, resting his hand on my shoulder for barely a second. But it's enough to make my stomach flutter.
"Should be just a minute, hon."
We step off to the side, and Nick gets a menu to look through, and everything they serve here is an innuendo. Sausages, buns. Abby can't stop giggling. I have to keep reminding myself this is just a restaurant. I accidentally make eye contact with a hot guy wearing a tight V-neck shirt, and I look away quickly, but my heart pounds.
"I'm going to the bathroom," I say,
because I'm pretty sure I'm going to combust if I keep standing here. The bathrooms are down a little hallway past the bar, and I have to push through this crowd of people to get there. When I step out again, the crowd is even thicker. There are two girls holding beers and sort of dancing, and a group of guys laughing, and lots of people holding drinks or holding hands. Someone taps my shoulder.
"Alex?"
I turn around.
"I'm not..."
"You're not Alex," says the guy.
"But you have Alex hair."
Then he reaches up to ruffle his fingers through it.